Hey, it's Duff Dixon, and welcome to the Live Wide Awake podcast. Thank you for being one of our listeners in 88 countries around the world. Today, we're speaking with Victoria Wong, Head of Engineering for Geomobility at Google, and Grace Chua, Corporate Communications Manager at Google, two powerhouse women who I thoroughly enjoyed speaking to and learning from during this conversation. Victoria leads efforts in products and engineering, which includes building new experiences on Google Maps and working with forward-thinking governments across the region to achieve a more sustainable future. And Grace leads communication efforts in Singapore and beyond for Google, which focuses more and more on their sustainability activities, products, and activations. In this episode, we'll talk about how Google is working on ways to make the greener choice the easier choice, both for individuals, governments, and businesses, small and large, the sustainable action taken in the last two decades, and the ambitious goals for the next, and why technology is great and is solving for sustainability but must be used in a responsible way, and so much more. I hope you enjoyed this smooth conversation thanks to our sound partner, Audio Technica. Okay, it's time to live wide awake. Well, Victoria, Grace, thank you so much for joining me on the Live Wide Awake podcast. We're very excited for this conversation together today.
Likewise. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us, Stephanie.
Yeah. So I would love for each of you to share a little bit about your journey with sustainability and how your career brought you to where you are now.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Victoria Wong. So for those actually who don't know me, I'm leading the engineering organizations for geomobility at Google. And I look after the development for the mobility features in Google Maps with a core mission to help people going from A to B more efficiently, safely, and sustainably. Looking at my career journey, I started at Google in late 2020, right at the time when our CEO Sundar announced commitments that to help cities and partners to reduce their carbon emissions and 1 billion people through our products. And when I started at Google, my initial focus was really about helping to bring helpful features for cycling and walking to our users. And from there, like my journey with Google on sustainability really took off. I was asked to build a engineering and product areas and sustainability features into our products. So 4 months ago, I pretty much packed up my bag, moved from Vancouver, Canada to Singapore. And one of the reasons, you know, Singapore is chosen is really when I look at the Google Maps organization distribution, we already have a very strong presence in Tokyo, Sydney, and India. And Singapore is very central to all this location. And it also has a really great talent pipeline and a very forward-thinking government. And one of the key things I look at is our headquarters in Asia Pacific is also in Singapore. So that makes Singapore that perfect place to really building an engineering and product center for excellence for sustainability. And now that I'm here in Singapore, I actually really enjoyed how green and how clean Singapore is. And I can actually get access to nature very easily, just like Vancouver. And the transit is so easy. Great cycling culture. Being a cyclist, I love it. People here are super amazingly warm and approachable. When I'm working in the office, especially in the Google office with like people who are very light-minded, deeply care about sustainability, like Grace, I really feel energized and motivated. This really helped deepen my commitment to the mission to help 1 billion Google Maps users finding their ways, navigate the world, and making more sustainable choices. So, Grace, over to you.
Yeah. You know, I think, Stephanie, as a Singaporean, it always feels so nice when people talk about how beautiful our country is, and I couldn't agree more. But as a quick introduction, I'm Grace. I'm the communications lead here at Google Singapore, and sustainability is one of my portfolios. And, you know, what I would say for my personal journey is that I'm actually still very much on my sustainability journey. I think that sustainability in itself is such a broad topic. But what it also means is that there's just so much to unpack, so much to learn, relearn, find meaningful ways where we can all play our part in addressing this, you know, really important topic. And I would say that, you know, my interest in this space has really probably began when I joined Google a couple of years ago and realizing that I've actually joined a company that cares very much about doing right in the space of sustainability. And you know, I think what's really comforting but also encouraging is that in these days, you don't need to be in a sustainability team to bring sustainability efforts to life. And I would say that that's quite true for myself being in the communications team where sustainability is now part of my portfolio. But I mean, to Victoria's point, is having the opportunity then to work alongside with many other teams at Google, including Victoria's, on, you know, sustainability related efforts, initiatives, programs. And I think I'm in a very privileged role where I get to share that with other people and the work that we do, exactly what I'm doing with you now with this podcast and conversation. But I think what really deepened my interest in this space is I find it very rewarding to learn from the organizations that we work with who are really, you know, looking at technology as a way to solve problems. And so I count myself extremely fortunate to do the work that I do. But I also think that, you know, we really are in a time where if you have a passion for sustainability or actually anything really for that matter, is the fact that we can upskill ourselves in that space, ask thoughtful questions, stay curious, be proactive and seeking out ways to contribute, whether it's at work or on a personal level. But I think, you know, we all have that opportunity to drive change from an individual level. So I think for me, I think sustainability is a space that's very exciting, but also there's lots to do. And I think both companies, but also as individuals, have a part to play in that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I really loved so much of what you both have shared, and especially the fact that you don't have to be in a sustainability role to actually have this as part of your remit these days. And I think that's a testament to the fact that Google really does prioritize this across all different business units. So I'd love to understand a little bit more about how sustainable is a company like Google really, and how much do they prioritize this across all the work and products that they do?
Yeah, well, I could take that. And, you know, I think sustainability has been a core value of Google, even at the very, very beginning, more than, you know, 20 years ago. And as a company of our size, you know, we do see it as our responsibility to operate sustainably. We see this as the right thing to do. So it is certainly an area that's very much a priority for the company. And if I could probably, you know, share a bit more in terms of how we approach sustainability at Google, it's really anchored through three main pillars. So the first is, you know, we try to be sustainable by leading by example. And that really means looking at ways where we operate as a company. So from designing more efficient data centers to creating more sustainable offices and workspaces, including the one in Singapore, but it goes right to building better products or better devices. So things like designing our Pixel phones, for example, with recycled material, or making a commitment to ensure that, you know, our product packaging is 100% plastic free and recyclable by 2025. But we also know that, you know, with sustainability, it goes very much beyond how we operate as a business. We want to bring people along on the journey. We know that our impact is only far greater when we work with others. And so the second pillar that we look at is deploying technology and resources then to support our partners. And partners is a term that can be also very broad. It could cover cities, it could cover businesses, governments, but so many others. In one of our best examples of this work that we do offer a tool called Environmental Insights Explorer. And it is a free tool meant to help city governments to measure their carbon emissions and really get data insights about their environmental impact. And, you know, we're really proud to see that this tool is now in nearly 42 cities worldwide, including places like Taiwan and Indonesia here in Asia Pacific. But I would just probably wrap it off with the last pillar that we look at, and that really is about enabling everyone, you know, yourself, myself, to make more sustainable choices by incorporating sustainability features into our products, such as maps and search, which hopefully is familiar to everyone. But, you know, I know this is a space that Victoria is very passionate about, and I'm sure she'll share more during the conversation as well.
Yes, great. Thank you for that high-level overview. And so what about its own particular impact? Can we maybe just dive a little bit more about some of the actual actions and implementations to reduce the impact that Google has?
Yeah. So I think it would be quite helpful to start from a global perspective. And this really goes back to my first point that I was saying in terms of trying to lead by example. And so as a company, we have been on our sustainability journey since 2007, when we were the first major company to become carbon neutral. And later on in 2010, we were also the first tech company to buy renewable energy at scale. But where we are today as a company is we are entering our third decade of climate action. And we certainly have a very ambitious goal to operate on carbon-free energy 24/7 by 2030. And that's really the hope of working towards a more sustainable future. So what this really means is that for anyone, you and myself, every email that we get sent on Gmail, every YouTube video that we watch, every question that we ask on Google search, the hope is that it will be powered by data centers that are supplied by clean energy every hour of every day. We certainly recognize that it is an audacious goal. It is an ambitious goal. But I think as a company, we know that it's the right thing to do. And we're really focused in getting there. And, you know, if I kind of bring it to Singapore, much closer to home, when we think about data centers, we really want to make sure that they're designed to be efficient and environmentally friendly. And so, you know, we do have teams here who really think about using advanced cooling techniques, using machine learning, as well as to have, you know, smart temperature, lighting, whatever that might be, to really further reduce the energy use in our data centers. And so our efforts, we do see that our efforts are yielding, you know, promising results here. Based on the stats that we got, you know, on average, a Google data center is actually twice as energy efficient as a typical enterprise data center based on the changes that we've done to our data centers. But also, I think when you compare it to several years ago, you know, we now deliver around 7 times more computing power with the same amount of electrical power. And so, you know, I think on a very high level, that's what we do as a global company. And we take the same approach with other data centers all around the world. But one thing that I would love to share with people tuning in as well is that as a company, it also goes down to the really little details. And one of my personal favorite, if I could share about the Singapore office, is we actually package used coffee grounds from our cafes every single month. And Stephanie, if you ever come, I would love to give you a packet. What's really great is that we turn these used coffee grounds into fertilizers, and that's one of the ways that we reduce waste. But anybody can take that home to use for their home gardens. And so, you know, the way I see it is that our employees love so much coffee that, you know, these are all the little changes that can really go a long way in making a difference. And so I do think that there is, of course, so much more that we can do in this space, but I think we're making good progress. And as an employee of Google, from my lens at least, it is pretty encouraging to see our leadership recognizing the importance of doing our part for the environment. And I often think that the success of any company is having a North Star. And so I think it's about bringing people onto that journey. And, you know, when we look at how we operate internally, it goes back to my introduction, where sustainability isn't something that's only done by one team. The hope and hopefully that's something that we've been doing well internally, which is making sure that teams and internal teams and existing product areas, as well as our roles and functions, all have certain level of sustainability built into them, so that it is really everyone's job to think about ways that as a company, we can make a difference in the work that we do.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I find it really inspiring. And I guess I'm glad to hear how integrated the approach seems to be, from like the big audacious goals for 2030, which would be incredible if all of our emails are carbon-free energy by that point, and like YouTube scrolling, like that's really incredible, all the way down, as you said, to like the coffee grounds and integrating this experience for all employees. I think, yeah, it's really inspiring, and I'm glad to hear it, because we need like the MNCs and the large companies like Google to be leading the way so that everyone else follows and falls into line as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now I'd love to zoom in a little bit more about the actual technology that's used to drive some of this ambition into action. So I think maybe this is maybe for you, Victoria.
Yeah, for sure, Stephanie. I think, you know, you're kind of, you know, talking about how Google were leading the way and talking about translating ambition to actions. Like, from my perspective, we're as Google in a very unique position with an incredible opportunity that really to bring that significant impact to the world using technology. So Grace talked about the three areas that, you know, we can work together. Particularly, I haven't got myself a hands on the coffee grind. I hope I will do that. But from getting things done, it's really about setting those audacious goals for ourselves and mobilizing others to actually achieve those goals. So I'm going to give you a few examples how we actually use technology to actually help people, businesses, and also cities in their green journeys using our technology. We can start from the people side because everyone uses Google Maps. So one of the main goals that Sundar actually shared back in 2020 is to help 1 billion people reduce their environmental impact each year and empower them to actually make those very sustainable choices for our product features. And if when I look at my space in the mobility space in MAP, our data really shows that 25% of the global emissions really come from the transportation sectors. So that's where we think about how people contributing to reducing that climate impact is to for us to start giving them the helpful information so that they can actually make that choices for themselves. If I'm thinking about the product feature that we recently launched, one of the things that's actually very popular and well received is the eco-friendly routes on Google Maps. I actually use it a lot when I was in Canada. I was fully guilty. I'm a driver. And the cool feature, how that works is like we take a very large data set from local authorities. We use artificial intelligence and actually showing people the relative fuel and energy saving with the estimated arrival time so that people can actually using that information to choose the route that actually worked the best for them. And of course, like we usually pick the one that actually has the most efficient fuel and energy savings with the relative shortest ETA, the estimated arrival time, as the top choice for user. Then note it with a little green leaf so that it makes it a very easy and simple choice for people to make and take when they start driving. Since the features launch, we actually did a little math on the routes that people actually chose to take on Google Maps, and the result was quite stunning. We've seen that 500,000 tons of carbon emissions was reduced basing on the route choices that people make through Google Maps. And that's actually equivalent to removing about 100,000 fuel-based cars off the road. And this is actually a really good example how we actually showcasing that individual action may seem minor, but in aggregate, they make a significant impact to our environment. And I know this feature, I've been asked so many times when it's available in Asia, and my team's working really hard on it. And we are really looking forward to actually launching in some of the APAC countries this year as well. So now, you know, I talk about how we're doing on the individual level through Google Maps. For Google, we don't want to just stop at individual. We really want to go further on the sustainability impact. So we actually want to help businesses who are actually having a green goal to have the ability to assess the environmental impact and direct their resources accordingly. So one of these tools that we're offering to businesses is the Google Earth Engine, which is powered by our cloud infrastructure. How it works is actually it combines data from hundreds of satellite and Earth data observation sets. And so then it can actually show timely and accurate insights of the world's habitat and ecosystem. And this tool, you know, we've learned from a lot of our business partner that has actually helped many organizations across even the Asia Pacific regions with all sizes tackling the challenges differently. And in some really cool way, some organization use it to actually for fraud and drought predictions. And then there are organizations that use it to monitor forest, water cycles, and biodiversities. And to further our impact, we also want to very closely partner with governments and cities to drive this changes at scale. And one of the thing that we actually realize is there's so much data out there, and it's very, very hard for some of these forward-looking cities to take meaningful actions. So the tool that we use, Grace actually touched on it a little bit earlier, is the Environmental Insights Explorer, we call it EIE. Yeah, I'm not going to repeat that, but just like a couple of very cool examples, like in India, in Pune city, the city is actually using EIE to actually help them estimate trip emissions so then they can actually take more meaningful actions. And in Japan, Yokohama, they're also using our EIE as a tool to actually educate their citizens about how to actually take action, live more sustainably. So, you know, those are kind of like what we're doing at Google. We start with individuals, partner with businesses and cities to scale that impact. And my key takeaway on all this is our work's really connecting us back to the Google overall missions. As a company, we organize the world's information to give you access to that you need, to the information and the tools that you need, and make the decision with the full information. So again, on the sustainability front, you can make that choice for yourself and live more sustainably.
Yeah, amazing. It's so interesting to hear the depth and breadth of the products, even just like under the mobility sector. And like you kind of touched a little bit about people being able to look at forests and biodiversity watch. And so I would love, because I actually only just recently learned that you had forest watch and fishing watch and all of these different products that people, anyone can actually just go on and use. So would love for you to share a little bit more about the sustainability suite of other types of products that are also offered that people might not have heard about yet.
Yeah, so one of the really cool feature, like we tend to forget, and actually the funny thing is like my team just reminded about this feature last week, is the time lapse feature on Google Earth. So we've seen billions of people actually, you know, from all over the world to use Google Earth to explore our planets from different vantage point. And, you know, I'm sure there's tons of YouTube channel out there to kind of like, hey, interesting moments of Google Earth. And in 2021, we actually added a new time dimension. So what that means is now with that time lapse feature, there are 24 million satellite photos from the past 37 years that we compiled into a 4D experience that people can actually use and watch how the climate and the planet change unfold in nearly four decades, and spotlighting the climate changes in our planet. And we believe with the visualization, the 4D experience, it can really spotlight and actually inspire actions from individuals. Mm. And Grace, what's your take?
Yeah, Victor, it's so funny, Stephanie, because again, I think I'm like Victor, even sometimes myself, I'm like, oh, I didn't realize we have such a cool tool. And I think when Victor reminded me 24 million satellite photos over 37 years, if I recall what she said, that's incredible. You know, the amount of imagery that we can do, but using technology to then make it easier for people to understand and to utilize it in the best way possible and in a helpful way. I would say that my favorite initiatives that I would love to share with more people is actually our Culture Meets Climate Hub. And it essentially was developed by our Google Arts and Culture team. And it is an online site. It was developed in partnership with various partners, including museums and universities all around the world. But, you know, if you are someone who is very curious about learning more about the environment or climate change effects, I personally think this is really a great resource. So, you know, if anyone visits the site, you can actually find interactive projects worldwide. You'll find artists interpreting climate data in a more digestible manner. What I love is you can transport yourself into different parts of the world to better understand the meaning of melting glaciers, for example, or rising sea levels, and really more about the planet that we live on. And I truly believe that information is key, and information is out there. And I think it's all a matter about taking the time to learn. And I think what we often talk about is making information more accessible, but we really want to make it easier. And so I think a site like this is really hopefully a place where even if you're curious, you could be a student, you could be someone who's a working professional, but hopefully it is helpful. So if anybody's interested, would love for them to check out Culture Meets Climate. You just have to Google it. You'll find it. So hopefully that will be a helpful resource to more people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just learned something new as well. I don't think that was brought up at the press conference. So that's really cool. I'm definitely going to explore it later. And we'll be listing all of the resources mentioned as well in the show notes so people can get it easily. but yeah, it's so interesting. I'm working with artists. I mean, that sounds really cool. So I'm definitely looking forward to exploring that. And so we've talked about kind of big businesses and government. We've talked about individuals. So I'd love to understand a little bit more about how Google could be used or is supporting startups and nonprofits to reach their green goals and what they can really look for, because I think we have a lot of small businesses and entrepreneurs that listen to us too. So maybe there's something interesting for them.
Yeah. You know, Stephanie, I love this question because I think, like I mentioned during my introduction, I think I learned so much from organizations like that. And you see many nonprofits and startups in Southeast Asia, but also the wider APAC region, who are really developing innovative tech solutions to really protect our environment and tackling, you know, areas of concern, whether it's waste management to air quality to biodiversity protection. But what we've learned through the work that we do, the reality is that for many of these organizations that we support, we often find that they lack the resources and funding to then scale their solutions further. And this is talking about solutions that could be done in country, but there's so much potential for it to go beyond that country to the world and to other places who may be facing same issues. So going back to your question about how we're supporting startups and nonprofits, some of the ways that we do this is really through the programs that we have as well as funding, because we know that these are helpful areas. So, you know, double clicking into a bit of funding. As an example, our philanthropic arm, Google.org, has actually given more than $14 million to nonprofits who are actually focused on sustainability and climate-related issues in Asia Pacific. And, you know, if I could share a story, I personally had the chance and the opportunity to meet the founder of Gringo Indonesia Foundation, somebody that we've been working very closely with and also supporting through the funding from Google.org. But what they do in the waste management space is incredibly inspiring. And what I learned from them is that in Indonesia, plastic waste still is a major challenge. And I think when you combine that with the lack of widespread, you know, public awareness on waste management, you know, we often see that trash then often ends up in the ocean, which is really not great. And so through the funding that we've given them, as well as them using our machine learning platform called TensorFlow, they've been able to build an image recognition app that has helped waste workers in Indonesia to better analyze and also classify waste items and also quantify their value. And so we're helping not just the planet, but we're also helping their livelihood. And I think that's always a great thing where you can, you know, do more for the environment, but also for on the economic side. And so what's really encouraging to see is that since they launched the app, they were able to improve recycling rates by 35% when they first rolled this out in Bali, if I'm not wrong. So very incredible work that they're doing. And I think this is stories like that are always why we want to continue doing the work that we do with nonprofits, because they are truly the ones on the ground and making a difference. And I think many people can benefit from them if they're able to scale and make their solutions more accessible in that sense. So in fact, last year we launched a $3 million sustainability seed fund through Google.org, and it's done together with AVPN, which is the Asian Venture Philanthropy Network, as well as the Asian Development Bank. And what essentially is through this fund is we want to support nonprofits in this region who are really working on technology-based solutions in areas like biodiversity protection, water preservation, and of course, many others. And what we hope that we can support them is for them to apply for grant funding. And, you know, they could get anywhere from $100,000 to $250,000. And beyond funding, like I mentioned earlier, programs is also something we look at. And so last year, we recently launched our very first Google for Startups Accelerator, and it's purely focused on sustainability. And this is open to startups and nonprofits, specifically in the circular economy space. And what it does is to offer some of these founders and entrepreneurs mentorship, but also technical support from, you know, Google engineers and external experts who are dedicated in the space of sustainability. But I think what's also very valuable is when you actually bring people together and help them form a community. And it really goes back to my belief that when you have a community together, it's the best way to share ideas and discuss. You might be working on the same challenges. So that really is some of the examples that I can think of. But what I'll say is that, you know, time and time again, we do see the value of partnerships, bringing various stakeholders together on a shared journey. And hopefully this is something that we can continue doing with other organizations as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think community is such an important part. And it sounds like there's some really fantastic initiatives for more people to get involved in. So thanks for sharing. And I think, yeah, you've talked about the obviously technology-based solutions, which we need so much of. And I think it's actually a really exciting space. At the same time, not to be biased, but a lot of, you know, there's a lot of young activists and everything that also think that technology isn't the answer and it's not going to solve all of our problems. So I guess on a personal capacity, like where do you guys working for technology and seeing the potential of what it can solve for, but also maybe you also see some of the shortcomings or the pitfalls and that side of things. So yeah, I'm just curious where you guys land on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I could jump in, I'm a bit of an optimist. Really, Stephanie? And I say that because I truly believe that technology can be helpful, but it has to be used in a responsible way. And so I often think that when you, again, going back to at least my personal experiences and from a personal capacity, is that when you see organizations really trying to think of ways to use technology for good, or AI for good, for that matter, I think it can make so much difference. You know, we've seen work in India where, you know, there's an organization called Wadwani AI, where they're using AI to solve for crops and making sure that, you know, they're removing pesticides. But again, in a helpful way, we have seen through the work that we do at Google, where you're using AI for flood forecasting, for example. And so there's so many case studies and proof points where technology can be helpful. But again, it is important that technology is also used in a responsible way.
Yeah, I just want to add to it. So a lot of, you know, this the whole theme we're trying to talk about the Google mission is about assessing the world of information and making it available for people so they can also make their choices for themselves. So it's not about we giving all the technology and making people all of a sudden turn into sustainability, and we are offering the information enough so then that consciousness can actually start kicking in. And that's why the approach is always threefold. It's not just about at that individual level. We want to build that awareness at the individual level so then they can influence the business, they can influence the city, and then partner with policymakers like the cities. So again, not about telling them what to do, but giving them the information so they can actually equip and have that context and all the data that they need in a helpful way, then they can make that decision to move the needle forward. And you know, I am a firm believer that like organization of all sizes leaning into their strength and their ambitions of making our planet better in aggregate, we can actually achieve a really great impact on the sustainability front.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. There are power in numbers and everyone needs to do a little bit so that we can actually change a lot. So yeah, I totally agree. And you know, on this podcast, we talk a lot about conscious living. So it's not just about all the amazing work you're doing, but I'd love to also hear a little bit about how during challenging times, personally, are there any practices that you've adopted that keep you going? Or maybe you've also come across like eco-anxiety or something like this, or maybe just anxiety in general. I don't know. But yeah, I think two very powerhouse women like yourselves, I'd love to hear, you know, how you keep going sometimes when the going gets tough.
Yeah. So like Grace talked about the power of positive thinking. So what keeps me going is really my own belief that I can make a positive difference, whether it's small or large. There's always an opportunity to learn in both high time and low times. And really looking at my current work at Google Maps, having the reach of a billion users, that really give me that sense of purpose. And the work I do here actually matters and has a profound impact in people's day-to-day lives. And being able to work with passionate individuals like just like Grace, that who are fully committed to that positive change in the world, it really motivates me and keeps me going even in very difficult times.
That's great, Victoria. It's so interesting, Stephanie, with your questions. I feel like I get to know Victoria a bit more as well as an individual.
That's awesome.
But I think for me, you know, going back to your question about going through challenging times, I think we all have different ways of coping. But on a personal level, I truly enjoy going for long walks. I really feel it always has helped me. I love our botanical gardens. To Victoria's point, Singapore is so beautiful and there's spaces for us to do this. And so I love it. I try to spend as much time as I can during difficult times, or actually in general, actually walks are always good for you. But you know, I think there's something about connecting yourself and immersing yourself in nature that really helps me, you know, clear my head. And I try to make it a point to enjoy the walk itself. So not listening to music, just being more present. I won't lie, sometimes I get to hear a bit of conversations here and there. But, you know, all in all, I do find that very therapeutic. And whether it's a sunny day or a slightly gloomy day, I do think that that's one thing that I always, always turn back to.
Yeah, absolutely. There's something quite magical about just being present in nature and just creating that sort of white space and allowing for ideas to process, or even just like the days to, like, you know, to process what's been happening. So I'm a big fan of nature walks as well.
I might see you at the botanical garden, Stephanie.
Yes, we can have a walking meeting. I love those. Those are way more interesting. And if you guys could go back and give yourself, your younger self, a piece of advice, what would it be?
Well, I take a step first. And if I really have that opportunity to go back and tell myself a piece of advice, I think it would really be about learning from mistakes and being empathetic. I probably would tell myself, don't be afraid to make mistakes because you're learning. At the moment, things can really feel traumatic and difficult, but we will get over it and learn from it. And knowing that everyone comes from a different place and of good intentions, it's important to have patience and empathy and take the time to understand people's different perspectives and their journeys.
Mm-hmm. I think for myself, when I think about my younger self, I always felt like I need to know all the answers. You always feel that there is this expectation for you to know what to say. If I think back about my younger days and even when I first started my career, it almost felt impossible to just simply say, I don't know. I don't know the answer. But now I know that we often don't need to know all the answers, and you simply just need to know where to find them, whether that's asking questions, to do your research, to find someone that may know, speak to an expert. I guess there's just so many ways of getting to where you hope to be with the answer that you need. And so if I could time travel and speak to my younger self, I would really tell myself that it's really okay to not know everything. And I just need to know who to ask. And I would probably remind the younger Grace that you can just Google it. So that's, you know, the best way of also getting your answers.
That's so cute. But yeah, beautiful answers. Thank you both. And final question for you both is, how do you think we can live wide awake?
I can give my personal spin. I took up meditations a few years ago. It really helps me clear my mind and keeps me focused. And personally, like, you all love nature walk. I love nature and animals. And that's why I really also find my work so meaningful here on the sustainability front. I get to preserve this beautiful place, this beautiful planet that we live in, and share it with other species as well. And of course, I do make time to disconnect from my work. I talk too much about work often, and really enjoy nature without that distractions. Traveling, I think before our podcast, we chatted a little bit, I really love traveling. I do think that it's a good way for myself to build that awareness of the world that we live in, experiencing, learning about the different cultures, the different histories. And it's also a really good way for me to practice the patience and the empathy while traveling.
I love traveling, so I can completely relate to what Victoria said. But it's such an interesting question, Stephanie. And I think when I think about the question about living wide awake, the first thing that came to my mind was how every day I would try to spend a few minutes to reflect on the day. And I ask myself a few simple questions and I would jot that down in my journal. And, you know, it really helps me to be more aware, but also more introspective and being more in tune to how I'm really feeling. And I think hopefully that goes back to your point about living more wide awake. So the questions are really simple, but it really helps me to think about how did the day go? What are the things that I might have missed out, but actually those were great moments. So things like, how did the date go? What did I learn today? Who did I connect with? What am I grateful for? And what do I look forward to tomorrow? Again, very simple questions, but I think it's about being very intentional about your day and knowing that there are actually good things, even if it was a challenging day, that there are good things. And so yeah, I'm hoping that today's entry will be about this podcast.
I hope so too.
It will hopefully pop up in today's entry.
No, I think that's an intentional and beautiful way to end the day. And just by reframing, even if it was a challenging day, finding those moments of joy or happiness or things that were good and ending that like as your end of the day, because then you're rewiring your brain also, like you're going to wake up happier knowing because you're looking forward to something for tomorrow. So I think very powerful. So yeah, well, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you both. I just want to thank you for your time and for sharing so in depth, but also so vulnerably at the end. So thank you both.
Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us. It's been a great pleasure in sharing what we have done at Google and also our personal perspective. Thank you for the opportunity.
Three things I'm taking away from this conversation with Grace and Victoria. Firstly, individual action may seem small, but the aggregate is massive. And this is why we need more people taking small steps to be part of the big whole. Secondly, technology can be helpful, but it must be used in a responsible way. And thirdly, collaboration and community are vital to solve for sustainability and can work really nicely hand in hand with technology. I'm curious, what did you think about the episode and what were your main takeaways? Is there a topic you want me to dive deeper into? I'd love to hear from you. You can find me at Steffel Dixon or at Live Wide Awake. If you got something out of the podcast and you want to continue this journey with us, consider subscribing and supporting. I hope that today's conversation stirred something deep within you, ready to awaken. And until next time, live wide awake.